Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday morning, the last Friday of July. Can you imagine another summer month checked off the list as we move on to into August? But well, here we are, and we have a wonderful panel, and we're going to discuss all of the news of the day, and we're going to try to keep it clean. which is going to be, it's going to be a challenge, but I think we'll rise to the occasion. 13 minutes past 9 o'clock on the 28th. Let me introduce our panel members to you. Chris Churchill is here. He's a columnist from the Times Union newspaper. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. Former regional administrator of Region 2 of the Environmental Protection Agency. Yes, there is an agency that is supposed to protect our environment, and Judith Enck once oversaw that, and she is with us this morning.
Morning, Joe and Chris.
Very nice to see you. And Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, good morning, Joe. I'm just Ducky.
Ducky.
Roselle has been listening all morning to the Queen version of Scaramouche.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
It's a great song.
Now, let me ask you, I was listening this morning, you were doing your commentary, so you are, do I have this right, you are going to be an auctioneer this weekend?
That's right. I've done this before. I like being an auctioneer. It's fun, you know, and we adopt some of the techniques on the fund drive. When you hear me say there should be phones going off all over the house, that comes directly from my auctioneering, which is there should be hands up all over the house. It's the Housatonic Art League is having an art auction of their wonderful work from 5 to 7 p.m. on Saturday at the Jennifer House Commons on Route 7 in Great Barrington, with proceeds going to the wonderful organization, CATA. I don't know if you know about it, but they do God's work.
Yeah.
Community access to the arts and to the HVAL. Housatonic Valley Arts League. So come on, come all, and we'd love to see you there. It'd be fun.
It seems to be it would be perfect for you to do that kind of
perfect
thing.
Perfect.
Very
Joe.
Fun.
Just,
well,
just perfect.
All right. So Alan will be getting his vocal cords ready this morning as we talk about these issues, and then he'll be ready tomorrow night to auction off all kinds of good stuff for a great cause. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Just a quick reminder, keep your letters short, keep them to the point. We want to get to as many as possible. Some people manifestos, for want of a better word, so don't do that. Don't include links, because we can't click them on the air, and we don't have time, and quite frankly, we won't click on them. And don't use abbreviations and proofread them, so Alan can actually try to convey what you want us to say. All right.
And in this case, Joe can actually say, because
that's right.
Joe will be reading your letters today because I'm in an unauthorized location.
Unauthorized. Oh, cool.
Yes, true.
Yes. we'll try to get the paperwork through so we can authorize it. Let's get started and talk about what's happening in our world today. Well, of course, the big story, and Judith and I were just talking about this, but I don't know. I was up to 2 o'clock watching the healthcare debate. I couldn't turn it off.
Unbelievable.
My goodness.
That's dedication.
Well, I don't know about you, but I would, you know, at 11 o'clock, all right, I'm going to turn it off. And at 12 o'clock, I'm going to turn it off. I'll read it in the morning. But you just couldn't do it.
I think a lot of Americans tuned in, and it was dramatic. I mean, I personally had the experience of, I was coming up from New York City last night, so I watched this unfold in real time on Twitter, stumbled off the train at 11:30, went home vowing to go to sleep. But there's so much at stake, and rarely on the Senate floor do you have such high drama. So I'm with you, Joe. I mean, it's a sleep-deprived nation this morning, but I think a lot of people were watching.
Well, I got up at 2 this morning and turned on the television and saw McCain's incredible thing, Judith, walking in and looking at the vote counter, the parliamentarian, whoever does that, I don't know, and putting his thumb down.
Right.
Putting his thumb down. Now, that's a piece of tape which is going to be immortalized. It really will. I mean, talk about a hero. There he was.
Well, I was sound asleep, so I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Wise man.
You're fine for just waking up in the morning and checking it all out then.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it didn't really change all that much, but it is. So what we're talking about, of course, and we've been talking about it all week, will the skinny repeal bill pass? And we were back and forth. I think some thought it would, some thought it wouldn't. We didn't know. We didn't know where McCain stood, and that became more apparent throughout the day. Then you have this trio, again, more political theater, about 7 o'clock last night, this trio of senators who come out, including John McCain and Lindsey Graham, and say, we're not going to pass this unless we have assurances from the House of Representatives that they aren't going to just pass this as is. And then the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, a short time later, comes out and says, well, we're willing to negotiate this. We'll talk. But also left open the window, maybe a crack, that they would pass it as is, and that was what was not enough for John McCain to cast his vote.
Thank God. But I thought the craziest thing was, first, the process of they didn't see the bill until 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
CBO score, Congressional Budget Office score, an hour later, and then expected to start voting at midnight. And what was kind of interesting is the number of people who commented on, this is how it happens in Albany at the state legislature.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a nice reminder that that's not normal. There's no reason why you can't read a bill that affects a sixth of the economy for more than an hour. But I thought the premise of Lindsey Graham and others that we hate this bill, but we're going to vote for it to advance it, hoping that the House will negotiate with us, was profoundly flawed because it was only going to get worse after the Senate acted. And I think McCain, who's been around for a while, kind of called the question on that. All I can say is insane strategic approach.
And Judith, you know, when you think about what they were doing there, it's incredible because this skinny bill wasn't so good in itself.
Right.
And that's what they were all worrying about. As Joe says, they were worrying that, you know, the other guys in the House would say, okay, rather than go to a conference and do it, we'll just pass the skinny bill, which will immediately, I think, get rid of health care for 16 million Americans.
Additional, right?
Yes, additional. And raise premiums by 20% in 2018, not 20% increase, you know, 4 years down the road. And we all know what happens in 2018. It's the midterm elections.
It was 18 pages. I read it when it was released. I started to go through it. And as I was reading, I was like, oh, well, this is skinny. I mean, there is not a lot of detail here.
18 pages is skinny. Yeah, definitely.
There's not a lot of detail there. Chris, I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to ask what happens now. Is this done for now? Or do we just watch the slow collapse of Obamacare and then they take it up after the 2018 elections? It would be nice to think that this is over, but of course it's not over. It's going to keep going and going
and
going.
Well, they will take it up after the 2018 elections if the Democrats take one House. That's for sure.
Well, either way, they have to, don't they? I mean, they can't just let the whole system fall apart.
Well, the best thing they can do is just do nothing. And I think if the Trump administration doesn't try to undercut Obamacare, you might have some stability in the markets. I mean, Democrats and Republicans agree Obamacare needs some revision, but politically, I don't see how they come together. I mean, if I thought the second most dramatic thing last night was seeing McConnell's closing speech, where he blamed the Democrats for this failure. The Democrats were not involved. And not only that, most Republicans were not involved. Remember, McConnell had his little committee of just 13 senators, no women. And this is McConnell's baby. And for him to stand there and blame the other party, I think points to the sad reality that I'm not sure the two parties can come together.
But they don't have to do much to undercut Obamacare. You know, all he really has to do is not enforce the individual mandate.
Exactly.
And it'll slowly just sink on its under its own
weight.
But
that would be illegal.
So
it is the law of the land today.
People will sue.
They'll get a TRO. I'm more worried about the Trump administration doing what you just said, but also other subtle things.
Underfunding and all that kind of
Yeah.
So let's take the president at his word. What the hell? Let's do it this one time. The tweet is, three Republicans and 48 Democrats let the American people down. As I said from the beginning, let Obamacare implode, then deal. Watch. That's frightening.
Well, what he's saying, and I think both Chris and Judy got to have it right. I'm gonna make sure that this thing fails. I mean, it's one thing to say let it implode. He's going to help it implode.
Right, exactly.
And that's the whole point.
I mean, if you want to be optimistic about it, I know it's not easy to do, really. But if you force yourself to be, you could say that. Well, what he's saying there is that the deal part is, you know, work with Democrats and do something in a bipartisan way, right? I mean, it's not – dealing would be good in a sense.
I don't think this president knows how to get a deal in Washington.
No, he doesn't.
And he was not active in the final hours. You know, Pence was sent over to the Senate floor while you were slumbering. We thought that he would be casting the tie-breaking vote, but in fact he was – walking around the Senate floor lobbying members. And apparently Trump called McCain at the last minute, and that had zero influence.
Yeah. Let me read, Joe, if it's all right with you, one letter we got, which is which I really thought was sort of interesting, and I think Judith would like too. Okay, here's brief to the point, enough with the McCain hero talk already.
Mm-hmm.
With all due respect and thanks to Senator McCain, he really doesn't have that much to lose. The real issues are Collins and Murkowski, two women, in capital letters, who have a lot more at stake in terms of their political careers. Well, you know, I take some issue with the letter, to be honest with you. I think the point about the women is exactly right. These people have been steadfast, and as we all know, they called Murkowski and threatened the money that was going to go to Alaska from the Department of the Interior. But McCain has to face his maker, which we all do, of course. And we know that he's got a terrible disease, and he sure is doing the right thing.
Susan Collins probably has more to lose from voting for the bill than voting against it. I mean, she's being talked about as a gubernatorial candidate in Maine, and Maine's a very kind of middle of the road state. And I think if she voted for it, that would be more politically troublesome for her than voting against
it. But remember, the governor of Maine was Donald Trump before Trump was Trump, LePage.
Right.
And I really have such admiration for Collins, because not only did she take a brave vote, but she was out on the Sunday shows last week explaining very, you know, strategically why this was bad for the residents of Maine. So I agree with the letter writer. Hats off to Murkowski, Collins, McCain. And I would just offer a friendly amendment. Hats off to the advocates who stuck with this for months. I mean, people with disabilities, the visuals out of the White House and the Congress over the last few months of people in wheelchairs standing up for their rights was nothing short of inspiring.
During the time when the networks weren't talking about Scaramucci, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, we don't have to, but it
no, we have
I don't know. It's a pretty good story. But they would go and show the protests that were happening in the Capitol, and they were very profound. One thing about McCain, Alan, is that do you think that he was perhaps surprised by the reaction and the he gives an impassioned speech on the floor after voting for it to go through, took a lot of heat of people saying, well, here's a guy who is benefiting from a health care plan that no one else will have the right to, flying in to cast a vote to move this forward, but then gives this very impassioned speech about how lousy the bill is. Do you think he was making up for that in some way?
You know, you really don't know what goes into the mix. You really don't know. I was going to think along the lines of Judith with the with Murkowski. That was an interesting thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. Seems to me I remember that she got defeated in a primary, a Republican primary in Alaska, and that people did this thing and make you cry. There's going to be a great movie about it someday, in which people wrote in and used stickers or whatever they do over there, wrote in her name, and she won the election. What a person. So she knows she's got an awful lot of people loving her.
Yeah, and that's a hard last name to remember to write in. But let's also remember she's part of a political dynasty in Alaska with her dad. And I think she was the right woman for the moment, along with Susan Collins. And I just all along, even when McCain kind of shocked all of us and said he was going to allow the bill to come to the floor, deep down, I didn't think a guy who recently had such a profound and sad health diagnosis, given his career, I just couldn't see him in the end showing up and ripping health care away from millions of Americans.
And that silence as after the press conference and after Ryan came out yesterday and said, we're willing to work with you. Although it was funny because the two branches were going back and forth like, well, it's not our bill, it's your bill.
Right.
No, we're not.
Right.
No, we're not going to be responsible. You be responsible for it. But that silence from say 10 o'clock to 11:30, 12 o'clock, where McCain, because Lindsey Graham came out and they sort of said, okay, we're good, everything's fine, and McCain just didn't say a word.
Well, he was on the phone with his governor.
Yes.
We all know the name Governor Ducey of Arizona. And I think any respectable governor would say, probably not good for my state. And McCain said all along that he would be guided by what his governor recommended. So once I saw that Ducey came out and said, no, vote no, I breathed a little sigh of relief.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a couple of letters. We welcome yours as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Judith Enck, and Chris Churchill on the panel this morning. We will talk more about this subject and much, much more right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Friday morning. Very nice to have you with us. A reminder, you can write to us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We've been talking about health care for the first section of our program, and we have some letters on that. Heather writes, Alan says McCain is a hero because of his vote on this travesty of a health care bill. I agree that he made the right decision this time. One good vote, however, doesn't absolve him for the past 8 years of extreme partisan politics in which he participated. As a recent example, I offer his support of the theft of a Supreme Court seat by a Machiavellian Republican Senate. Heroes are heroes every day, not just when it suits their egos.
Okay.
Larry says if they ever make a movie of the Trump administration, Scaramucci should be played by Joe Pesci.
I think we all agree on that.
Yes, or someone. Yeah,
and they will make that movie. There's no doubt about it.
Mooch. The Mooch movie.
Showtime.
That's right. So
late
when,
at night.
Hopefully.
When you think about what is it, this is going back to what Chris said, you know, where do we go now from here? But I want to go back to this tweet that the president said of just, you know, deal and this the whole thing about imploding. And that doesn't seem to be what doesn't really seem to be on anybody's radar, except for the 48 Democrats and the three Republicans that voted against it. But that idea of how many people get really severely damaged in this process.
Well, I think that has not been front and center for Donald Trump. I mean, he just wanted a win. And I honestly don't think he knows the details of this health care proposal and what it will do to millions of people. So, you know, I think Chris is right that you would hope that the two parties could come together, but it's just so polarized. And I think we've got to be on patrol for how HHS and the rest of the Trump administration will try to damage Obamacare and, by definition, damage millions of Americans who rely on it for health care. You know, what could be more important?
All true, except I disagree with you about one point, and that is he knows Darn. I want to use Darn in light of Mr. you know, Scaramucci's deal. He knows darn well what it will do to segments of the American people. He's not a stupid man. He may be an evil man, but he's not stupid. He knows.
I'm not so sure. You know, healthcare is complex. I think there's a reason you didn't see the president out there describing in detail what he wanted to see in a healthcare plan. I don't think he knows.
No, that's true. But he does know because the newspapers are filled with it every day, every single day. 16 million, 16 million, 20 million, you know. That much he knows.
And what about, I mean, we were talking about Senator Murkowski, but what about the fact that the Interior Secretary calls her and says, oh, by the way, if you don't vote, we're going to take this out on you. That's scary. Yeah. Go ahead, Alan.
Can I have just 1 second on that? You may remember I made a little mistake on the air. I talked about the Boy Scout leader who was in his Boy Scout knickers and all behind the president and applauding when he was going after Hillary and all the rest of that. Turns out that was the Interior Secretary. In a Boy Scout uniform. I've now had maybe 25, maybe 35 letters pointing that out to me. I just wanted to make sure that nobody wrote me another letter because I understand it.
And the Boy Scouts officially apologized for...
Well, that was something. That was something.
About 3 days too late, but okay.
Yeah, they should have cut his mic if the Boy Scouts really cared about this. That would be too dramatic. But really, the head of the Boy Scouts should have just wandered over, tapped on the president's shoulder, and say, sir, can we have a moment?
But there aren't too many people who are going to do that to the president of the United States.
The Girl Scouts would have. That's a great point. Back to Zinke, though. The reason why he made the call is because Department of Interior does a lot of business in Alaska.
Well, put another way, they own Alaska.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I know that some Democrats in Congress have called for an inspector general investigation. I don't know if laws were broken, but I can tell you, as someone who worked in the Obama administration, no Obama cabinet official would have done that. And I think many presidents in the past administrations, I mean, this was truly unbelievable. And I think Lisa Murkowski had the last word on that last night.
Yeah, I mean, there's always arm twisting that goes on with legislation, but it usually stays in the House, you know, or in Congress itself. It doesn't go on beyond.
Totally inappropriate for a cabinet official to make a threat like that. But this is Trump's Washington.
Did anybody feel some pity for you know, the majority leader when he almost cried he was making his announcement?
He should have cried.
Yeah, I didn't. I felt some gratification, and I was a little ashamed of myself for that.
He got choked up because he had a political loss. But I wish he could show that level of empathy for people who were worried about losing basic health care. I would argue that McConnell is playing a much more destructive role in Washington than even Trump.
Right. Well, McConnell certainly is a facilitator and has a lot of us, Judith, scratching our heads and saying, what is it? I mean, what is it that gives Trump that much sway over a guy who ought to be a little bit more independent, or who just does whatever he's ordered? Well, his wife, right? Isn't his wife labor secretary? Yeah. There's that.
Yeah, she's in the cabinet. But I think it's more than that. I think he wants to get a bunch of judges through, not just Supreme Court, but all the federal court judges and things like that. But Alan, why do you think McConnell didn't pull the bill once he knew he didn't have the votes? I was a little surprised by that.
Well, he didn't know that. It seems to me that's the best answer. He did not know it. I mean, I'm telling you, when McCain walked in that room, everybody was surprised, and he put his thumb down. Thumb down.
Yeah, there were gasps when he voted, right?
It was unbelievable. Yeah. He didn't know. He thought he had it.
Yeah.
I remember hearing the Democrats cheering and Chuck Schumer waving wildly to tell them to stop cheering because he didn't want to, you know, maybe rile the other side.
Yeah.
I do want to say I thought I was bleary-eyed, but I thought the McConnell closing speech was a show of real bitterness, and I thought Schumer was a statesman in his speech. I think he was really trying to find a way to reconcile all of this. And
he's a great friend, he's a very good friend.
Yeah, don't you love it when they say that? Because I don't know if they're really friends. But I thought Schumer set the right tone in terms of going forward. It's for people who are not awake in the middle of the night, it's really worth going back and looking at the McConnell and the Schumer closing statements.
I know this is going to be seen as a cheap shot. And it's, you know, probably not important. But if I was Schumer, I would do something about those eyeglasses. Because, you know, it gives him the look of what the Republicans are always yelling about, you know, in terms of the effete Democrats and all the rest of it. Surely you can get some eyewear that will allow you to see what you're reading as well as what you're seeing. You know what I mean?
Oh, so you mean the perched on the nose thing is what you don't
yes,
like?
Yes, yes.
The peepers, exactly, as they call them, yeah.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Okay.
What, do you think that's too professorial or something? Or?
Yeah, sort of in that category, Chris.
Huh. Yeah, I'll have to do some Googling to see if I
can. I'll tell you off the air what he means. Okay, so here's some letters. Joe writes, do you believe other Republicans would have or wanted to vote against the bill, but to pacify constituents, the Republicans got together and arranged it so everyone could vote against it to save face and agreed McCain, who has nothing else to lose, could vote against it and take the heat?
No. I don't agree with that at all. I think McCain really did examine his conscience. I've been thinking about somebody who said I called him a hero. You know, there have been a lot of people in history who were not that nice, but who at the last moment when they had to stepped up and did what was right. And at that moment, I got to tell you, I think he was a hero.
I think he's a hero. I mean, he's a hero just for first of all, his war record.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, he's a hero for the classy way he campaigned against Obama. I mean, his record is there. He's not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But I you know, he's going to go down in history as a
sure,
pretty great senator. I mean, I don't have any doubt about that.
Certainly have political differences, but.
Right.
I think the only real serious reserve, I agree with everything Chris said, but. McCain introducing the nation to Sarah Palin is really rough,
and I think he tried to admit that was a mistake,
and yeah, wasn't yeah, really his. I don't think he knew what he was.
I don't think he knew that.
That's right.
No, you
dumb.
Have to hold him accountable. He was running for president.
I agree. You have
even
to hold him accountable.
Even if he was hesitant, he gave us Sarah Palin for.
Yeah, but what that didn't, you do. He gave us Sarah Palin.
If McCain won, she would have been the vice president.
Yes, but well.
Well, we would have had We would have had better insights into what was going on in Russia.
I'll let it go. I generally agree, but it was a pretty.
Yeah, like
big
I said,
thing.
He's not perfect. The Sarah Palin thing. I mean, he elevated her to a certain position, but her popularity was organic and had nothing to do with him.
I think some dumb staff member feisted her upon McCain.
Well,
I don't think he knew what he was doing.
I can't think of the name of the book, but there's a great book out about that pick and how that happened. But the other thing too is that she was a successful governor of the state of Alaska. And it wasn't until that we really got the cork out of the bottle and that crazy was unleashed. So
Did you say cork out of the bottle? Cork out of the bottle.
Well, either could be appropriate. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a lot of letters. We'll get to those and talk about other stuff right after this. I spent the entire break trying to figure out what the name of the book was that I was talking about, the really good book on the McCain-Palin pick, and it's called Game Change by Mark Halperin.
Oh, yes.
Really, yeah. Really good. And it's I would recommend it to anyone of how that all went down. We have a lot of letters. Let's get to those. Kathy writes, you're all right. Mr. Trump is not stupid, but he is arrogant because he is evil and doesn't care about anything but his own win and his own money.
That's about right.
Any disagreements? Anybody? Okay. No pity for McConnell, says Brucey. Not after the way he treated Merrick Garland, disrespected Obama from day one, and how he has been enabling the worst president and administration we've ever seen. Anybody?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mike writes, do you really think Trump believes the numbers about health care published in the fake news outlets? Well, that's, I mean, that is the thing that he cites the sources that he goes against. There's no question
about
it.
Well, many people are trying to change the CBO because the Republicans didn't like the CBO score. That's kind of crazy, and we need to keep our eye on CBO budget cuts.
Well, that's putting it mildly. This guy has turned this government into such chaos, and it's so awful that when we discuss him rationally, it is just beyond me. What he is doing is extraordinarily destructive to America, to America's place in the world, to what's going on. I mean, you really have to. I have real fear about him and his hand on the button and all the rest of it. It's awful.
That's a really great point. When we treat it normally,
I'm not one to be quoting Jeb Bush, but Bush in the primary said this would be the chaos presidency, and I think Jeb Bush was absolutely correct.
Yeah, that's certainly true. as we turn to the Scaramucci story in a little bit, it definitely seems to be true.
Bob in Milford says McConnell is tearing up because he knows he's soon going to be out as majority leader. Allen, don't feel even a tinge of guilt at your glee on his failure. Mean old Mitch is just that mean.
By the way, anybody who thinks I felt a twinge of guilt is just mistaken. I was delighted.
So what about the larger issue in this letter about him being out as majority leader? It's going to take more than that, don't you think?
I think his people respect him for taking the heat, for going up front, for doing the best he could. No, I don't see anybody giving him a tough time.
Mark says McCain is never going to run for office again and is immune from retribution from Trump and others. He was able to cast a no vote and protect a number of his fellow Republican senators who could then cast a yes vote and still know that the bill would fail.
The only thing with that is I was watching Heller, from Nevada, who's the most vulnerable. He waited till after McCain voted, and he still voted yes, which I think may seal his political future.
I was surprised by that, too. I thought, well, once somebody did the, as Alan would call, the profile of courage, you would think somebody would maybe follow suit.
Yeah, because a lot of them were hanging back and waiting to see how it was going to go. But
look, we do know from printed reports and everything else that when reporters talk to these guys off the record, they can't stand Trump. These are the Republicans. But their continued tenure is more important to them than doing the right thing. And yet, you think about this for a second, when the gravestones get put up, who are the ones who are going to be remembered? The, you know, butt kissers who went along so that they could preserve their office, or the people who really stood strong? That's all there is to it.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, we're only 7 or 8 months in at this point, you know, and if he fires
Chris,
Jeff Sessions.
It's been 8.5 years. Hasn't it?
How do you mean?
It feels like
it feels like 8.5 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's been 6 months. We've all aged.
I mean, I think a lot of the break will eventually come between the Republicans in Congress and the Trump administration. And maybe if he fires Jeff Sessions, that might spur it along, but it's coming. You can feel it coming.
I agree.
I heard a journalist from Iowa say a very interesting thing recently. He thinks Trump will crater when Fox News turns on him. I don't know if we're ever going to see that.
Well, you know, the New York Post, which is a Murdoch property, has turned on him on several occasions.
Yeah, I mean, look at today's cover saying Survivor White House outspin outlast. And
the Wall Street Journal has been scathing, too, the last few days.
Trump hates Sessions. Scaramucci hates Priebus. Who will survive the administration that becomes the biggest reality show on television?
The Peggy Noonan column, which I think is going to be in the paper tomorrow, but which is already online, is probably one of the most scathing things that's been written about Trump, especially from someone who's on the right.
Republican speechwriter.
Yeah.
Well, the real frightening thing I think all of us acknowledge is what happens when this country is facing a true emergency. And it's, you know, things happen in the world. Mm-hmm. And what is the capability of this White House and this administration to handle things? It's very, very sobering.
Especially when you think about nuclear winter. I mean, you know, that is what's scaring everybody to death here. To this guy who has no limits. That's his problem. There are no limits on what he'll say, or do or think is politically correct for him, his finger is on the button and it's there all alone. And so you like to think of, we've talked about this before, but you like to think about 7 days in May and you say, who is going to stand up and say, no, Mr. President, you may not push that button, even though they are not legitimately allowed to do that?
Well, Alan, I'm still focused on what Malcolm Nance said on the show last Friday when he walked through who does and doesn't have the ability to do just that. So, and it's the worst thing I've heard since the president took office.
No, that's right. It's only Trump who has that power to do that. And, you know, I could write the script in advance, but if I did, I would be accused of saying something really, really bad.
Let's go to more letters. Jim writes, look on the bright side. What has happened regarding Obamacare is probably the best civics lesson the U.S. citizenship has ever received, as long as they are really listening, not just skimming the sound bites. Dan says the reason Republicans failed to repeal Obamacare is because in 7 years they utterly failed to come up with any better ideas. The only plan they could ever come up with is we hate Obamacare. That's not a plan. I hope now some legislators can focus on the parts of Obamacare that need fixing. Chances of that happening?
Well, Judith, I wanted to ask you a question. Since I have always believed that no matter what Trump said in the election, this has been a war against people of color from the very beginning. And you remember Trump said, what do they have to lose?
Right.
Well, a lot of people are seeing what they had to lose. Now you see all of these people, many of them who are Caucasian, going on and saying, if I had lost my Medicare, my baby would be dead now. I would be dead now. All of the rest of this stuff. So all of a sudden, this hidden war on black people, which is what it was, in my opinion, the focus has changed to a lot of middle-class Americans who get it, which is why that bill only had a 16% approval rating.
Right. And I think Chuck Schumer cares very deeply about the middle class. So he was focused on that. I think very few people care about low-income Americans who could have been hurt by these cuts. But, you know, there's just no explaining what the priority for Trump was other than he wanted to win.
When, well, let's see, let me go to, here, thank you, sir. We have more letters. Let's go to Royce, who says, let's give full credit to Senator Hirano of Hawaii, who interrupted her treatment for fourth stage cancer to fly to D.C. and cast her no vote. Without it, Pence would have broken the tie on skinny repeal, worth noting. Dear distinguished Alan. You're okay, because the subject line is Alan's right. Right again. The president does not does understand the repercussions of signing one of these bills. That's why he called the House bill mean. I also believe that Bannon whispered in his ear that members of his oft-mentioned base would be affected by the Medicaid cuts and block grant reforms. That's from Greg. Then Stu Shinsky, our dear friend, writes, hi, Alan and all. Yes, McCain voted his conscience, but it's no coincidence his vote was positioned as the decider, and it's absolutely no coincidence McCain brought the death knell to Trump's signature campaign pledge, especially after Trump excoriated McCain as not being a hero for getting captured in Vietnam. Sweet revenge. Another great show, panel. Thank you, Stu. We got this from Bear, who writes, thanks for a consistently terrific program and another wonderful program presented by WAMC, The Power of Words. Professor Shartok examines some of the history's most powerful speeches. After hearing the president's recent address to the Boy Scouts of the Jamboree, I thought, well, that will never make it to The Power of Words.
actually, it should. If you think about it, it should. We could get a panel together and we could play that. That's a great idea, and I hope David Gustina, who's the producer of that wonderful program, is taking note of that. Because, you know, it doesn't have to be a good speech to rise to that. This is going to go down in history, I think.
I'm looking at Ray right now, but Ray, do you think David's taking notes? Yeah. Edie says Heller's voting yes enables Trump's bullying. Linda says, good morning, panel. I don't think legislation should rely on a pinky swear. Matt says, I think it's important to remember that the recent health care vote was equivalent to the repeal votes that were brought forth during the Obama administration. There is no real impact, nothing real at stake. As we see a lot of yes votes that may not be there when a vote on an actual piece of legislation is happening.
Well, that's a very good point. Don't you think that they're not done yet? Anybody who thinks this is over, it's not over.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying at the beginning. It's going to, and it's not going to be over when the Trump presidency is finally over. It's going to go on and on and on. I mean, this is just going to be an issue that we continue to deal with.
Except that what this proves, at least to some degree, is that you can't take away a major social program when it has been passed. Can you imagine?
Well, that's what the Republicans feared when it was being passed. They know once an entitlement gets established, they're very, very hard to take away.
So here's Alan Chartok saying the following thing. What would make me go out with a pot and pan and even worse, into a crowd? It would clearly be messing with Medicare. It's a great program. It's an entitlement, so-called entitlement, which I believe in. And they have made real forays into going after Medicare as well as Medicaid. Hey, that's my ox that's being gored, as well as my sympathy for all those others who are on Medicaid and what this must be doing to them.
And I might just add that today is the anniversary of the Senate vote in 1965 that created Medicare and Medicaid. So there's some poetry to all of this.
All right, let's take a break. We will hear the poetry of a newscast from one Ray Graff. We'll do that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here, Judith Enck, and Chris Churchill make up the panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let us go to the other unfortunately big story, which has to do with the infighting in the White House between, everybody, I guess. It seems like Anthony Scaramucci, the White House communications director, took on both Reince Priebus and Steve Bannon in a telephone call, ultimately, I guess, an interview that he did with New Yorker magazine. And was the setup to it is weird in the sense that he was mad, Scaramucci was mad, that the fact that Scaramucci, Trump, and the First Lady were having dinner with Sean Hannity and a former Fox guy.
The head of Fox.
Head of Fox.
Bill Scherer.
So then he thought that it had been leaked. Subsequently, we find out that it was really the person who did it, because Scaramucci assumed it was Reince Priebus who he attacked in this phone call. But the person who actually told him the information came to Scaramucci and said, well, yeah, I told him, but that's public record as far as who goes to dinner with the president. That's not that's a thing we do. We tell people who has dinner with the president. That's not a that's not a secret thing. And that occurred after the uncensored rant that took place. And it was really something. I beg you to read the actual article that appeared in The New Yorker and see what was said and try to make sense of it. There are many, many frightening things in it, and not the least of which is that basically Scaramucci is saying that he's going to contact the FBI, have everybody in the office fired, and, oh, by the way, the way that you try to get a reporter to reveal their source is to play the patriotism card.
Right. You're an American.
For God's sakes.
Yeah. Well, one correction there, Joe. At least I read or heard. He didn't say, I'm going to try to get them fired, all of them. He said, I'm going to fire them.
That's true.
He said, I'm going to fire all of them. And then you're right.
Now he's the president of the United States. I'm going to fire them.
Yes. Yeah. And he said that Reince Priebus, if you want to leak something, he'll be asked to resign very shortly. well, we've been hearing that story for several months, of course, but now you do have to wonder. And so the big question I have here is that if Priebus leaves, if Bannon leaves, and we have no indication that they will, but let's just say they do, does that mean, so are the kids, is Ivanka and Jared, are they on the Scaramucci side at this point?
Yes, they recommended Scaramucci come in.
Yeah, and the Priebus thing is interesting because he's one of the few ties that administration has left to Republican respectability and the Republican establishment and a lot of people in Congress too. I mean,
some would say an even hand.
Yes, an even hand. Without calming, and he seems to be a kind of a calming influence in that White House. Without him, I mean. What happens? You know, they're rapidly becoming the Oakland Raiders of the.
Hey! How could it be worse?
It could be worse.
What do you mean? What happens?
Well, look at what Scaramucci did. By the way, I love saying that word.
Well, of course.
Scaramucci.
And by the way,
can we just call him the Mooch?
And by the way,
because then you don't get to say Scaramucci, which is so much
fun. And by the way, the New York Times published his remarks in toto.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, and I'm a little disappointed that Joe is.
They use the F word.
It's not describing them for us.
They use the F word. They're not. And I think, by the way, that was the correct move on their part, because for people to understand exactly how outrageous what Scaramucci was doing, you had to see the word. I mean, if you clean it up and you say expletive or something like that, it doesn't have the same power as saying a guy who's sitting at the top of the United States government next to on the elbow of the president is talking like this.
Yeah, I know. Whatever.
The guy with security clearance.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yesterday...
The guy is supposed to calm the troubled waters, too.
Yesterday was surreal. I mean, I was running around New York City, and I kept trying to find it for meetings, and I kept trying to follow what was going on healthcare, but Twitter was just all about Scaramucci. So I finally looked at the New Yorker article, and I had to read it twice, and I urge everyone to read the Ryan Lizza piece, and it is so disgraceful that someone who acts like that, let alone speaks like that, is in the White House. And remember, he was brought in by Jared Kushner and Ivanka. And I think the other interesting thing is he clearly is trying to drive out Reince Priebus and maybe Bannon. If the president is so unhappy with the two of them and the way the president is so unhappy with Attorney General Sessions, why doesn't the president just take action rather than publicly humiliating these guys?
If you think about what you just said, it's insane. I mean, you've worked in the government. The communications person is not supposed to be in charge of driving anybody out.
Correct.
They don't make the decisions. They just kind of repeat the decisions that are being made by other people.
Absolutely.
It's like, where's the chain of command? I mean, what's unusual about Scaramucci is that he's answering directly to Trump, whereas somebody in that position usually would answer to the chief of staff.
Right.
So it's just chaos.
And
I think
Scaramucci, again, the audience of one, he just is playing to Trump. And I think Trump loves this. I hate quoting Chris Christie, but remember, although he seemed to have a relaxing summer at the beach this year, but remember when Christie got thrown under the bus and was tossed out as the transition coordinator, Christie said he thinks there will be tremendous upheaval in this White House and he will be available for when people are fired. And I think he called that right.
Yeah, that's what they need, Chris Christie now. But don't forget.
I'm not advocating for him. I'm just saying
he predicted
this.
No, I know that. And we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Couldn't help myself. Sorry.
Yes, good.
But anyways, if you read what Scaramucci said, it's kind of hard to see how they all work together going forward. I mean, you know.
Chris, do you think Scaramucci's angling to be the White House chief of staff and that's part of this?
I have no idea. He just seems a little power hungry, that's for sure. I mean, for someone who's a communications director to this be essentially his first public, you know, interview or one of his first public statements, it's just crazy.
Well, remember
he said he'll never trust another reporter again.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he never said it was off the record. If
there
are communication directors who talk like that, but they, you know, they say, listen, this is off the record. You establish that from the get-go.
But the irony of here the irony here, of course, is that you have him talking about leaks, 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 and then ultimately this is what he leaked. And and it is really something, and we what we have long suspected of the infighting within this White House.
Right, that's exactly right. Anonymous leaks are terrible. I thought I was speaking anonymously to this reporter when I was saying all these bad things about other people in the administration. He's doing exactly what he's complaining about.
Yeah, so either way. So remember, it was just a week ago that he was announced, right? And he was kind of the golden boy because he stood at the podium and he wasn't Sean Spicer. And then he did all the Sunday shows last Sunday and got great reviews. So I have a kind of a bizarre observation about this New Yorker interview. It happened after he had dinner with the Fox News crew and the president and the first lady. Do you think Scaramucci was drunk when he called the New Yorker reporter?
Because drunk with power.
Drunk with power and maybe even physically drunk, because it just doesn't make any sense you're the White House press coordinator.
I don't know. I think he's just, I mean, it seems consistent with other aspects of his character that he's just a little, can become quickly unhinged.
But that's not reassuring anyways. I mean, if you're...
Either way. Yes, here's what we're debating. Is he nuts or is he drunk when he calls a reporter?
If you're the communications director and you don't have enough self-discipline not to call reporters when you've been drinking, then that's problematic too.
I
don't know which...
You think? Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
But I don't know here. Where's Saturday Night Live when we need it?
Well, they're coming back soon, so we'll...
Where's Sean Spicer? We miss Sean Spicer.
I wouldn't go that far, Chris.
Joyce writes to us and says, good morning, panel. Hey, did the Collins-Faso bill go down with this latest vote?
Yes.
Well, yes.
Has to.
Ron, where is the public outcry against Affordable Care Act? POTUS keeps saying it's so horrible, but I haven't heard many regular people speak against it. No. Well, it actually gets fairly high marks in polls, correct? Am I right?
Yes.
Over 50% now for the first time.
What can be done to help Obamacare with everything against it, or is it just time to come up with yet another idea so we can be done with it?
We'll never be done with it. I mean, many Democrats are talking about single-payer health care, public option, Medicare for all, and I think this is a perfect time to have that conversation.
Here's a question for you. Should states move forward with plans of their own, thinking that this might not? I mean, you hear people in Massachusetts say, well, we know that we're more protected than the average American because our state has done something.
Right.
One of the knocks against Obamacare is that it's prevented more states from doing things on their own. Would a state like New York be wise, or Vermont, which has talked about single payer, would they be wise to do that now? Or should they just let the federal government take care of it?
Well, I don't think there are options here. In other words, I think what happens is you do what you have to do. They would prefer that it become a national law or rule. But if it isn't, then states have to take care of their people.
But if you know the federal government's going to let it collapse, I mean, don't you have an obligation to your own citizens to try to step in? I don't know. I'm just posing the question.
I think that's the conversation that every governor is probably having with their staff today. I think the two people who were probably the most terrified watching this unfold were people who depend on reliable, affordable health care and governors who know what this means and how it could blow a hole in their budgets. Chris, you raise a good point. I think also so much of this is linked to federal funding and what HHS will or won't fund.
Mm-hmm. Anne writes, thank you, Judith, for pointing out McConnell's total lack of empathy for those of us who will be losing our health insurance. Clea says, Alan, time and time again, you have stated that all this GOP healthcare mess will eventually lead us to a Medicare for all system. I get a glimmer of hope every time you mention it, but how?
What happens is that we have realigning elections. So if what I think is going to happen is that the Democrats pick up either a majority or close to a majority and with a couple of votes pick up the United States Senate, this has led the way to saying, okay, we need something really better here. And the obvious place is Medicare for all. Hey, for those of us who are old people, we know what Medicare means to us. It's been great. So you start you make it a very gradual thing. You say, okay, every year you pick up another 2 years. So 63, 61, and you go down that way. And I think since Medicare has proven to be such a fantastic boon and has been so well done, that it's an obvious way to go.
Joanne writes this note and says, it's over 8 months since the election. It's sad that the media and your radio host have joined the Trump bashing parade. There are many folks out here who voted for Trump and are getting tired of hearing all the negative bashing. And we're turning off our radios and we're turning off our TVs to block you out. We're not rallying and protesting. Perhaps you can broadcast opinions that look to unite people and not assume everyone is a Trump basher.
Well, we just read your letter. You ever think of that?
I have this. I mean, we've been talking about this for, for almost over a year now. But this difference between right and left and right and wrong. Right? I mean, isn't that
Yeah.
I mean, that's a difference of, I think we can talk about the politics of an issue of healthcare, but also when you're looking at this, I find it hard to have anyone look at what we're seeing and find some semblance of normalcy or even
rightness.
A calming influence that feels that our country is in good hands, because it seems from just observation that that's ever since January 20th, it has just been chaos.
Now, I know that our letter writer, let me just harp on that for one more minute. I know that our letter writer isn't listening anymore, so I can say anything I want about him or her.
Because they have her, and she has already turned off the radio. Yes, that's what she said.
So therefore, I can say anything. You want to bet? Gotcha. Okay, but before, before I even say that, I had a guy yesterday, and he said, you've never had a conservative on your radio station. Oh, yeah? You ever hear Herb London? Have you ever heard of Rich Honan? And I said yesterday to this very nice man on the phone, I said, what about Rich Honan on the panel? He says, oh, well, he's not my kind of conservative. Can you believe that?
I mean,
so in other words, there's always a caveat that allows them to say anything they want.
The media coverage of Trump is extraordinarily negative. I don't think there's any way around that. But he brings so much of it on himself. I mean, we're talking about the Scaramucci thing because he hired a guy who would talk that way. No other president in modern history would have done that. And when you talk about negative media coverage, you have to point out that a lot of very, very conservative publications, the Wall Street Journal, the National Review, are writing scathing things about the way that Trump is governing. So it's not even, like you said, it's not necessarily a left-right thing anymore. It's just the obligation to point out that this isn't normal, that this isn't the way that George Bush governed or Ronald Reagan governed or any Republican president. I mean, this is totally, we're in totally new territory.
I mean,
here. You
see like some of our great conservative voices, somebody like a George Will, and it's just, you know, the general like concern over what is happening. But you're absolutely right, Chris. I mean, the things that we are seeing, so much of this is brought on by himself. The media takes hits of saying, well, all you talk about is what he says and what he tweets. Well, what if you're
he doesn't hold news conferences, and so tweets are the only way he really communicates.
And if you say, hey, President Obama wiretapped my office, and we were on that for how long before he had to come out and say, well, that didn't happen. But that was created completely by him. And yeah, you hire a guy like Scaramucci, this is what we're going to hear. So how do you not talk about that?
Mm-hmm. There's no way what Scaramucci said is not going to be news. I mean, you could look at the front page of the New York Post, which is generally a supportive of Trump.
But again, even if all politics aside, right, Alan? I mean, it's not bashing by saying that there is great dysfunction within the White House and that these, let's just say, four people, Trump, Scaramucci, Bannon and Priebus, are very much at odds. So as anyone looking at this and at the top halls of our government, there would be concern that is not working a little more cohesively.
And don't forget, quote, the kids, the nepotism in the White House. I mean,
right.
I think Kushner, who has an amazingly broad portfolio, is probably mostly focused on how does he keep himself out of jail. and we were told initially that Ivanka and Jared Kushner were going to be moderating forces. That hasn't happened. But I'm glad this listener or former listener wrote in because I
you
think
you can say anything you want, Judith. she's not listening.
I think she raises an important point. I don't agree with her criticism. However, I think what animates me is not Trump the person, but the policies of Trump. And early in his administration, you heard a number of people say, let's give him a chance. Well, we gave him a chance, and it's been six months of a hell ride.
And I don't agree with you. I got to tell you, Trump the person is an issue for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, Trump, it's more the person than the policy.
We really care about Trump the person?
Yeah. I'll tell you why, because Trump the person has a finger.
And that finger
is near a button.
Yeah.
That's why we care.
And after yesterday, we know what finger he's using. So,
no Republicans in Congress are happy with the way this is going, too. Right. To go back to your thing about it not being a left-right thing necessarily. People on the right, a lot of Republicans are only saying it on background and things like that. But more and more are coming out and saying this isn't good.
It's not normal.
We can't keep on this way.
I said, get into the 20s, and you'll see these cowards coming out and being. Having profiles in courage.
We are very late, but my thanks to everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back after this.
Thank you, Cheryl.